Michigan HockeyCast 3.20. Come for the grades, stay for the memories. You're a bit of a night owl, aren't you?
Some would say so.
We have had some interesting conversations on the next day of every day, it seems like.
It's never tomorrow until you wake up the next morning.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, you could be up till 3 and it's still
the previous day. If I text you at 3 a.m. and I say tomorrow, I'm referring to that day, as in that 24-hour period. If it's 3 a.m. on Monday and I say tomorrow, I'm referring to Monday. It does not become tomorrow until I wake up in the morning.
What if I'm already asleep, and then I get the text later? When I receive it, or
that's
when
the
you
gray
send
area.
It?
It's like what I was talking to you about. Like, when did the pool shot actually happen? Did it happen on March 17th or March 18th? I watched it on March 18th, but it happened physically in the Central Time Zone on March 17th.
I forgot we had that. We probably talked about that after about 2 a.m. one night.
Yeah, so
we've had some of our best discussions at like 2 a.m. one night when we're just debating what's going to happen the next week in the NHL or who just signed or transferred from Notre Dame, which we'll definitely get into that later. But we had a good one the other night where I asked you, okay, if you could take Michigan's four like lottery picks in the next NHL draft, which teams would you assign them to? And you were kind of intrigued by that one. And I thought you gave some pretty interesting answers, although I don't know that I agreed with a couple of them. But would you care to share with all of our audiences, considering the fact that the next really overly relevant thing that's going to happen to this program, other than maybe a defection or two, will be where these ridiculous freshmen or singular freshmen to be will be taken? Because they're all going what? Where's the fourth one of these guys going? Like, not a destination, but, like, what pick number is going to be, like, the floor?
So, what's interesting about this year is that the draft is super unsettled, and there's way more variation in where guys are thought to be picked. However, I think that Power, Hughes, and Beniers are probably the three that I think are the most likely of any prospect in the entire draft to go top five. Those are guys, some don't think they're top five, but enough people do that I think it's just likely they fit in the five, you know, top five to top seven.
All three of them?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Generally, from what I've seen, the range on those guys, there's some that think Power isn't top five. There's some that think Beniers isn't top five. But there's enough teams, I think, that probably do that someone will take them in that
range.
But at
what pick? If any of those four guys and Kent Johnson's
and Johnson, I don't think will go top five, but maybe someone will. I've seen scouts with him high. I mean, it's all about what the team thinks.
But at
right?
what pick are you thinking? Just it doesn't really matter who's taking it. That if one of these guys drops to, it doesn't matter who's on their board. This is the guy you should draft.
I don't know. It's so tough.
Like 15.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're all lottery picks.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
I would
almost...
I would be very surprised.
There's almost no way that any of these four are dropping out of non-playoff teams.
Yeah, I would say that.
Perfect. So, my question to you was if you could assign them to places that you would want to put them, not necessarily like your favorite team or whatever, but where it would be interesting to you as let's say, as a Michigan fan / NHL fan. So, I don't know, combine it all. Where would they go?
I saw this in a mock draft somewhere. I like the idea of Kent Johnson to the Devils. I think that you've got Jack Hughes as a top center who's a really skilled player, a good passer. Holtz, who they drafted last year, Alexander Holtz from Sweden, who is a really good shooter, but I think he sure isn't quite the playmaker Jack Hughes is, and I think you could probably pair Johnson with Heischer on a second line, and that could be a really interesting top six. He could play on the power play with Ty Smith and Severson, plus all those other guys. I think that would be a decent fit for him.
Okay.
I like the idea of Luke Hughes to the Red Wings personally. I think he...
From a fan perspective?
I just think it's a good fit. I think that...
So from an organizational perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think that him, what he brings to the table as a puck-moving left-handed defenseman... to go with Moritz Seider, who is a right-handed defenseman who's more of a defensive guy. That could be kind of peanut butter and jelly on a top pair. Both guys with a little bit of size, both can skate really well. I mean, I think that would be a home run top pair. Sorry to Owen Power, but I liked Buffalo as...
Why are we hating Buffalo? This is the second week
well,
in a
no,
row you're hating
it's
Buffalo.
Buffalo because Buffalo has cursed everyone they've drafted for the past 10 years.
Now, would Owen Power have to change his first name to Rasmus?
No, he shouldn't because of
don't
what
they
is currently...
Don't they have a plural defenseman named Rasmus?
Yeah, what is currently happening with some of those Rasmuses.
Rasmi?
The Sabres, you could spend 30 minutes talking about and how they've gotten to this point, but they've still, they still have got some guys. I mean, their last two drafts, they picked Dylan Cousins, who looked really good at the junior level, has struggled as a rookie, but, he's young.
Yeah.
And then they picked Jack Quinn in the last draft as a winger. So it's been a couple of years since they picked a defenseman, and you're getting to that point with Ristolainen where you don't, the ship's kind of sailed on him as being a good NHL player. And I think Dahlin could use some help. They're going to have Ryan Johnson from Minnesota, who was a first-round pick in the back end of the first round a couple years ago. I mean, I think Power, Dahlin, Johnson, a couple other guys there, that could be a good group. It's just, can someone break the Buffalo curse? Maybe Power is the one that will go in there and break the curse.
Okay, so we've apologized to Owen and apparently to Buffalo, too. And then, so we have Matty Beniers left.
Yeah, and... Beniers, I think Beniers could work on a bunch of teams. I mean, that's the thing about him is that he's just so hardworking. He does a little bit of everything that I think his skill set can fit wherever. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be fine in Detroit. I think he'd be fine in Ottawa. But I like Anaheim as the destination because I don't know if Trevor Zegras will ever play center. But if you could put him with Beniers on a top line, that could be very, very fun.
Would you put Beniers at center then if you had those two?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an ideal
okay.
group.
Do you think that'll get Getzlaff to sign another 5-year deal?
I mean, you could send him to Seattle too, but Seattle's starting a team scratch, so it's hard to say where's the fit when they don't have any current players.
Seattle doesn't really count for this.
And in Ottawa, again, I think they could use him, but I think they could use a winger more, so Dylan Gunther, William Eklund could work there a little better if you're just fitting it around. I mean, I don't know, it'll be interesting, but those are my ideal destinations.
Is there any team that you would prefer to not draft any Michigan player?
I picked all of those because they're really lottery teams. I mean, it's kind of that next group that I wouldn't necessarily want to see them go to for the same reason I didn't want to see Bortolo go to the Sharks because we don't know what the Sharks are doing. Are they rebuilding? Are they not?
I mean, they're making a playoff run now.
Yeah, but they've got all like 30-some-year-olds, and when they do start rebuilding, it's going to be painful and it's going to be long. So. Yeah. I didn't want him to go there. I mean, same reason I wouldn't. I mean, Columbus is 8th right now, 8th from the bottom. I mean, they've got a chance to be high in the draft, and I would not want any player on Columbus right now. They have no prospects.
Okay.
They're caught in no man's land. You know, John Tortorella is currently murdering Patrick Laine's career, and I would not want anyone on that team right now. And I mean, okay. Calgary is another team in the decline that I wouldn't want,
Oh, yeah, they might trade Gaudreau.
I mean, Dallas just sucks the life out of all of their play. So, I mean, anyone going to L.A. would be fun. They've got an awesome farm system, so that would be good. I mean, if anyone went to the Rangers, that would be fun, right? I mean, so it's just a matter of, I just focused on the really bad teams, I guess, is the way I would put it.
No, that's good. And that's the right answer, because you don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to take, like, the 15th best team who is already a pretty good team, and, of course, you want them to fit in there, so... That was an interesting open, I thought. You did a good job analyzing that and giving people something to look for in, 4 months, whenever the draft is and all that. So the next part that we thought we would take is the first segment and devote it to, the entire podcast, more or less, to kind of grading every player and area on Michigan hockey this year. This is sort of our season recap of the players and the units and... we'll end up doing like something of did it meet expectations and was this year worth it, quote unquote, and all that sort of stuff. So We will start with, at least in segment one, going through the forwards, and we'll just go down sort of the line chart, and I tried to break it up into lines, so we'll go through each sort of line where people played, and then we'll each have a grade and sort of a memory or something that we can talk about with each one. So to start, I think there's the one place that I want to start is the guy who wasn't always announced as a starter, but is kind of... I would say that the number one center on the team is Thomas Bortolo. He is a freshman, a second-round pick that went to San Jose. There's arguments for Beniers, and Johnson played well, and there's guys on defense, and there's always, you know, the plural goaltending, but I thought that Bortolo might have been Michigan's best player on the year.
I would say he was definitely their best offensive player. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, I think if we go back to the first time we ever saw Bortolo, which was at the USNTDP game last season.
Oh, yeah.
When he played at Yost, and those who were there, I'm not sure if you were there, but remember that as sort of thinking, I don't remember what Bortolo's stat line was in the game, but I just remember, like, wow, that guy is better than anyone on Michigan's team.
Currently.
Yeah. And it kind of turned out to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, he really had a great impact from the beginning to the end, and you know, his face-off ability allowed him to play a little bit on the penalty kill, and his vision, ability to run the power play units, and certainly the chemistry with Brendan Rassan was a lot of fun as the year went along. And
well, and that's something that didn't pick up right away, because they didn't play on the same line for a few series, I don't believe.
Correct, because, you know, Rassan spent the first few weeks toiling around with Johnny Beecher, and then they put Brisson and Bortolo together, and that kind of clicked.
Yeah.
And they became a really dangerous tandem. It was a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, when Michigan needed offense, Bortolo was a guy you turned to, and he's got just great hands, a lot of skill. And, you know, the unfortunate part about his season is he played himself into a point where you actually don't know if he's back next year. We hope
right.
he is.
Yeah.
But he did well enough that you could say he's ready for the AHL now.
He could be.
It's up to the estimation of the scouts, but I mean, he was terrific, I'll say that.
And it wasn't, like you talked about the scoring part, and it wasn't always goal scoring. That was something that he had a few goals. He had 8 goals, 22 assists. He had 30 points, which is pretty good for a freshman year, especially one that's shortened, because he only played 24 games. Michigan only played 26 games. So he averaged a point and a quarter a game, which is, I think, pretty good. But he also did it sort of consistently throughout the year. Like, there wasn't a rush of, oh, he just had, you know, 10 points over a weekend or 2 weekends or something like that, and that, like, built up his stats. He was generally on the score sheet when Michigan played games.
Yeah, I mean, he was very consistent and was just as good, I think, at 5-on-5 as he was on the power play.
Do you have a grade for Mr. Bortolo? If we're doing letter grades, A through...
I'm giving him a solid A.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan, we entered the year saying Michigan's going to need a couple of these young guys to be top-line players, and he was. So, you know, nothing else really to say there.
I agree. He was arguably either one of top two or three best players on the team, and was pretty much as advertised. Like, everything that we saw before or heard about it is what he gave us, and I think he was maybe even in some ways better because, you know, there were some little whispers here and there that maybe he wasn't as great defensively, but I think that there were definite times. I mean, I remember him like saving a goal in the crease one time.
Yeah.
He had a couple little different plays on the penalty kill at times where he would get back and get in someone's face. And do you have a specific memory of something he did throughout the year that stands out?
I mean, I think it's still the Wisconsin goal.
The Wisconsin overtime goal? Yeah, I agree. The one that he gave us their second point when you and I were trying to decide how many points it was worth, and there was conflicting reports, and no one knew if Michigan got 3 points or got a tie or got 2 or whatever, but that was...
Get hype, Sharks fans.
But not...
We just complained about your team. Now we're complimenting your
hopefully,
team.
Hopefully not too hyped in the near future, but maybe in a year or two. So we'll jump right over to his key line mate, another key contributor to Michigan's scoring success, and I thought got better filling out his game as the season went along, is Brendan Brisson. Also played on the top line, a freshman, a first-round pick of Vegas. And this was a guy that started the season kind of as like the Nick Stauskas thing, where he was just a shooter, and Michigan tried to set him up on power plays from the dot, and he just kept, we call them Brisson bombs, because he has quite a shot, but over the course of the year, developed some passing and more vision on the ice and had a knack for finding himself in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and I mean, he's definitely Michigan's most improved player throughout the season. I mean, you remember the beginning...
One of two, I would say.
Okay. I mean, you think back the penalty issue that plagued him so much
in the
fall.
Didn't we count those for a while?
Yeah, I mean, he committed a lot of penalties early on, a lot of them in the offensive zone, which is very frustrating. But, you know, once he went with Bortolo, which is, by the way, something we predicted. We were talking about early in the year how to get him going, and we said, you know, pairing it with Bortolo would work.
Yeah.
And they found that chemistry, and I think if you can get both of them back, which maybe you will, maybe you won't, that's something to watch for sure next season. I mean, they could be very, very dangerous together.
What's your grade for Brisson?
I give him a B+.
Ooh, okay. See, I also had him in as an A.
Okay.
And I probably wasn't there in the first half, but his improvement and how he just kind of became a big-time goal scorer. I mean, he was tied for the lead with goals with Beniers at 10, which isn't a lot, but I thought that after seeing him early on and hearing about him, I don't think Michigan could have asked for a lot more out of him, at least in his freshman campaign. 10 goals, 11 assists, 21 points. Not too bad for being a walk-in freshman. Do you have a moment or something to do you remember about him?
I remember him and Bortolo had a really nice goal together against Ohio State, I think, in the series in Columbus in the second game. I don't remember it exactly, but I remember it happening, so we'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't have a specific one, but I just thought that he was always sort of a finisher. Like, when Michigan was looking for the goal, a lot of times he would be the guy in the place that would score it. I think it happened a number of times. And we touched on it, of him being Michigan's probably most improved player, or one of their top ones. The other line mate, which started as one guy and ended as a different, I think, is that I want to go through, is Eric Ciccolini. And this guy is kind of interesting because he was sort of a late-round pick, a seventh round from the Rangers 2 years ago, and he's a sophomore this year, played on a number of different lines, but once he ended up with Brisson and Bortolo, I think that if both of those guys come back and Ciccolini stays there, if they keep that line together, Ciccolini could be a huge breakout player next year because as the season went along, he started filling the net.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ciccolini is a good developmental prospect, and he's very likely to spend all 4 years at Michigan, so this is when you expect him to start making strides forward. And, you know, the interesting thing about him is that he really didn't shoot much. I mean, his shooting percentage was the best on the team at 18.9%.
Which is high.
But part of that is just because he only took 37 shots. And so one of the things for him will just be getting himself in more high-danger areas, taking more shots. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he gets any power play time next year, because he didn't get any this year.
He didn't get any? I thought
remember him on the power play, really. At the start of the year, a little bit, but...
The thing that I always remember about him, and maybe we're doing our memory here first, was, well, he had that really nice goal from the slot against Wisconsin at Yost on the, I believe it was the Friday game. And then he just found himself sort of walking down the slot and getting those passes from Bortolo. And then as Brisson started developing, he was sort of the recipient of getting really nice feeds. And like, I think that's what led to sort of his goal totals rising, is like getting those great opportunities. And like you said, didn't shoot a ton, but the shots that he took, I think, were pretty high danger.
Yeah.
Do you have a grade for...
I mean, the one thing I will say about shots is just that the people that lead in shots, generally speaking, are some of the best goal scorers. And so that it's, you know, there's something to be said for just throwing pucks at the net.
You have to shoot to score.
But, I mean, what's the biggest key of Alexander Ovechkin's success? He shoots a ton. He led the league in, he's led the league in shots like 10 times in the last 13 years. I mean, no one has ever shot as much as Alexander Ovechkin.
Sure.
So it's just a matter of him, you know, Ciccolini recognizing that.
Yeah. Great.
I give him a solid B-.
B-? I had him as a B. You got really technical with your minus and pluses here. This is very Drain-esque of you. But I just went with a B. I thought he was above average and... a guy that I think to look at as probably a potential break, especially if his line can stay together, but as a potential breakout player for next year. We'll go to the Michigan's second line, which is going to be centered by a guy we've already discussed a little bit. We've discussed all year. Could possibly go number one in the draft this summer. Matty Beniers, who was a Harvard decommit after they opted to not play hockey. So Michigan is the recipient of one of the better college freshmen this year. He does not have a team yet. That is to be determined. You are hoping potentially he goes to Anaheim. And this guy is, he's like one of those players that I can't tell you what his best attribute is because he doesn't seem to be elite at one thing, but he's very good at probably everything.
He's the old five-tool prospect, using some baseball lingo, right? I mean, he does a little bit of everything. And I mean, honestly, his number one attribute is his compete level.
Yeah.
He, you know, hustles all the time. He's a gamer. He can play in all situations. I mean, he's a guy who, because of that, you know, ability to play up, is how he was able to play at the World Juniors and really fit in on a second line with some really good players around him who were older and more experienced.
Well, and like he also came in with a potential reputation for maybe not being the most defensive minded, but I don't remember ever seeing that at all throughout the year. I mean, he
was a really good all-around player. I mean, I think that the NHL level, he profiles as sort of that number two center, borderline number one center, if you put him with the right wingers, like a Zegras or, let's say, a Tkachuk in Ottawa. You know, I think he profiles as a Larkin or a Nazem Kadri type, right? Like your ideal fringy 1-2 center who can play with speed, can do a little bit of everything. And that's going to make him really attractive in the draft process. And, you know, he was a Harvard decommit. It's really hard to imagine the season without him.
Yeah, I agree. Grade?
I'll give him an A.
Yeah, I have an A. I don't know that Michigan could have expected anything more out of him. Do you have a specific memory?
My specific memory is the Minnesota series that Michigan got spanked because it was like, yeah, he makes the team a lot better.
Where's Matty? That's a fair point. The thing that I had for him, and this kind of goes with someone else we'll talk about very soon, but is just the forever shifts, where I don't know how many times Michigan would hold the zone for 40 seconds to a minute and a half, and they would end up just cycling the puck through him and KJ and the defenseman, and just you'd have the opponents chasing, but they'd end up changing an entire line while keeping the puck in the zone. And that happened, what, 5 to 10 times this year at least? And with this line. And Matty Beniers was, I think, at the forefront of it. So we will jump from him to his wingman who has been there. I think they stuck him together from game one, and I don't ever remember seeing them break up at all. Kent Johnson, who we talked about, will also go in the draft this summer, was a freshman, doesn't have a team yet, obviously, and had a lot of points. He had 9 goals, 18 assists for 27 points, averaged over a point per game. But you and I had discussed multiple times throughout the season that we thought maybe his point totals were slightly inflated due to a ton of secondary assists.
He definitely had a lot of secondary assists, which sometimes can mean something, sometimes it may not. But, you know, we watched all of the games. It was very apparent that he was not the line driver, which isn't, you know, the worst thing. Beniers was the one that sort of dictated play. But Johnson definitely, I think, you know, he's another guy that improved a bit over the course of the year. And, you know, the skill is still there, and that's going to be attractive for NHL teams. Because if you're looking, I mean, in some ways, Johnson is the opposite of Beniers, right? If your philosophy is to take well-rounded players, you take Beniers. If your philosophy is looking for one projectable talent, then you look for Johnson because he is the team's most creative player. And, you know, sometimes that frustrated us where it seemed like he would go for the fancy thing when he could have just done the generic thing and even got himself into trouble sometimes trying.
Just trying too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is there, and he does make great passes, and we saw that at different points. And he also has a pretty good shot, and we saw that in the goal he scored against Minnesota, the only bright spot of that one series when he came down the wing. I mean, he had 2 goals against Minnesota. He had backhand one as well.
Oh, the lifter.
Yeah.
Well, they were both backhands, I think.
So he can do a little bit of everything in the offensive zone. So, I mean, that's my summary of him.
Grade?
B plus or A minus.
Yeah, a little more friendly than I am. I just gave him a B. I thought that, yeah, he was good. I'm not taking anything away from him. He was above probably average. I think we expect him to probably score a little bit more than he ended up scoring, at least in goals. But I thought that he was just a little bit of a beneficiary of where he played. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think he'll definitely be back next year. But it'll be interesting to see.
I would think he is the most likely of the those four that we've mentioned right. So far.
Do you have a specific memory?
Well, or either of those two goals. Yeah.
That one's, and then, yeah, we talked about this, but the fancy Dan passing was just, yeah. Sometimes it was really great, and other times you're just like, what are you doing? But the third member of that line was Luke Morgan, who is a fifth-year senior. He is a current free agent. It is assumed he probably will not be back, but you don't really know because this is the COVID year is free. What do you have for Luke?
Luke Morgan, I mean, I put this in the season wrap-up column that will be published at some point in the week. He reminds me a lot of NCAA Darren Helm, where, you know, I mean, it's a little different because Morgan plays more in scoring situations. Helm was, you know, still is more of a defensive guy and plays in the penalty kill, things like that. But what really reminds me of the two is that both have the speed to give themselves chances mm-hmm. that they don't have the skill to finish. And, you know, I mean, his speed allowed him to play with Beniers and Johnson, but his scoring was never at the rate it needed to be because he just can't finish the chances he gets very much. You know, I mean, how many times do we see him in those situations, right, on breakaways or two-on-ones? And, yep. You know, he just didn't have that offensive touch. And so you'd like to see a little bit of a better finisher, I think, playing with those guys next year.
Yeah, my moment for him was, both of them came from the NCAA tournament when he got the face masking call against Ohio State, which was that big dust up, which was kind of a hilarious little situation. And the other one was I was really hoping that he would finish that really nice 3-on-2 to go up 3-0 against Minnesota, where Johnson and Beniers played very well, but JLF robbed him of it. But do you have an overall grade?
C.
Yeah, that's what I gave him. About average. I think he did what was expected of him. And in fact, I would say that he was better this year than he was in the past. And he played on a highly skilled line. And I mean, he's been a coach favorite forever, always gives everything that he's got. And he does put pressure on teams with his ability to skate. On to the third line. We'll start on the wing. Probably Michigan's maybe best senior, Mike Pastyov. We call him Pasta. I think it's a Michigan hockey thing. He's a free agent, I believe, and he started off on...
Yeah, he was the guy that really tailed off.
Yeah, he led Michigan in scoring for the first half of the... Or goals for the first, I don't know how many series, four, five, six series of the year, and he was playing with Brisson and Bordalo, and I think he still played there a little bit towards the end, but Ciccolini more or less took his spot as the year went along, if I remember correctly, and... his goals kind of dried up sort of after that.
Yeah, he is what he is. And, you know, we've seen him over his career. He can score a little bit, but at the end of the day, he's just not a guy that I have any really worry replacing next year.
Yeah. My memory of him was that really nice, well-worked power play goal at Penn State, where they pinged it around at the top, and he just kind of poked out from the corner and had a very easy tap-in goal. He had a few of those that was like, this is a guy that's not a bad place to for him to be. What's your grade for Mike Pasta?
I mean, C is fine. Yeah. That's just kind of a lot of these upperclassmen who, you know, are just okay.
He's what he was, and that's okay. The other winger on that line a lot of times was Nick Granowitz.
Granowitz, I like.
He's an interesting guy because he was sort of a net front presence his first year, and he still did that.
I mean, that was most
bit.
Of his goals this year too.
But they got him skating and moving a little bit more, and yeah. I thought that he added a slight other dimension to his game.
I mean, I think he's a very acceptable third line player at the NCAA level,
and he's only a sophomore.
Yeah,
obviously hasn't been drafted.
I mean, he's very old, but you can always improve when you play more games. And I mean, this was his first full season, really. So,
yep. His memory for me was the goal that clinched the third seed when they were in the process of winning that first game in Minneapolis, and it was 3-1. It became 3-2, and there was a shot from I think it was Beniers coming down the wing, and it came out down the slot, and Granowitz was crashing the net and put in the fourth, which was a huge response for Michigan in a big time. And I thought that was a really, really big moment for him.
That's a good answer.
His grade?
C.
C. Me too.
I'll give him a C+.
C+.
He was a little bit better than Morgan and Pastajov. So.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Yeah. His total numbers on the year were 5 goals, 6 assists for 11 points. So just under half a point a game, which is all right for a third liner. The third line center spot was split, so we'll go through each of these guys. The first one was, there's an argument that he could have been the first line center, and I think that's what Michigan wanted him to be. It didn't go that way.
The argument that he was the first line center?
Huh?
What is the argument?
About Beecher?
Yeah.
Well, they started him there a lot, and they played him there a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he played there,
and
but...
And then, that's what I said, is that, sure. that they started... I think they wanted that to be the
they
first line.
They definitely wanted that to be the
it
thing,
didn't
but...
go that way. He was a first-round pick of Boston. He was kind of... Johnny, like, finished last year really strong, and it looked like he could be poised for a huge breakout. And they paired him with Brisson, who was going to be a potential impact freshman, and Jimmy Lambert, who has a little bit of speed and skill from and is an older player. And it just kind of didn't go his way, and kind of like the rest of the season, as he then got hurt and missed, what, the last,
yeah,
dozen,
last few series,
dozen
yeah.
games or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the concern with Beecher is that his development seems to have stagnated, and... You know, they really did want him to play up in the lineup and put him in a lot of situations with higher skill guys and, you know, on the first power play. And it just doesn't seem like he's got that in him. But he's still got a lot of talent. And there's a difference necessarily between talent and skill. And because he can handle the puck decently well. He skates well for a big guy. He's got that size. I just think he might need to be more physical or maybe play down low a little bit more. You know, kind of... tailor his game a little bit differently to what he can do.
Is he a guy who could play as a wing if you gave him a good center?
No, I think he could be okay as a center potentially, but he might just have to learn to play a little differently. Learn to play a little more sort of the, you know, kind of like the Granowitz mold a little bit, where you're getting a little dirtier and you're getting a little greasier. And, you know, I think he could learn a lot from, I don't know, someone like a Dino Cicerelli, right? Who just hangs around the crease and just tips
Does
in
he have
goals.
The temperament
and...
of Cicerelli?
That kind of player, right? Like, yeah. I just, you know, if they can get him back, he can be a really good third-line center, I think. But that's his role, and I think Mel needs to understand that at this point, especially if you get Beniers and Bortolo, one of the two back, right?
Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting to see whether he is back, because I think there's an argument that Boston might move him somewhere.
Just
and see if he could get a change of scenery.
Jump his situation. My memory of him was that game that he kept getting all those breakaways. He had like two or three breakaways.
Yeah, that was against Ohio State.
I think it was Michigan State, wasn't it?
That was Ohio State.
It was Ohio State.
Michigan
okay.
State doesn't really give up breakaways.
Okay. Well, he finally got one, I think, and he finally scored, but he had like two or three of them, and you're like, oh, well, Johnny, get this one. He got one, and I think that was the game we were... Oh, no, it wasn't the game we were calling, but...
No.
So Johnny gets hurt, and then they bring in... Jimmy Lambert to be the third line center, you know, so to speak. And Jimmy's a guy who he's played here a couple of years now. He kind of had a nice end to his freshman year, scoring a little bit on some shots from angles and on the power play. And they put him with Beecher, hoping to kind of kick him off. His season started really nicely and then just kind of faded a little bit. I'm not really sure what he's going to be in next year coming up, but he got some minutes at center. He's played a little on the wing. I'm not really sure what to make of him.
It's pretty clear that Mel likes him a lot. He's given him a lot of chances over the years and put him in a lot of situations. I just don't really see what his role, you know, what he really does super well. I mean, he can pass a little bit. I mean, he's okay, but I just don't really think he's a guy who should be in the starting lineup, frankly.
Yeah, he had 1 goal and 6 assists. My memory of him was that blind pass against Arizona State to Beecher, where you're like, holy crap, what a pass. And then we looked at it again, and you were like, do you think he meant to do that? Yeah. Like, well, I think he meant to do that, but I'm not sure that he saw Beecher flying down the slot and hit him. I will give him credit, though. He did, once Beecher was out and Michigan was starting to play tough games towards the end of the season, he got 4 points in his last seven games, which was more points than he had previously, because I think he ended with 7 points, and he got four of them in the last, I think, like, you know, few weekends. So he did come on strong a little bit when Michigan needed him to. Do you have a grade for Jimmy?
C minus.
I had him as a D, first D. We didn't do Beecher either, and I had Beecher sort of as a D, but
yeah,
also
Beecher's
as an incomplete.
A D in my mind.
As an incomplete as well, just because he missed the last third of the season. So now we'll move on to the fourth line, and this is kind of...
We should do all these guys together.
Okay. We will do Garrett Van Wy, Nolan Moyle, Philip LaPointe, and Dakota Raby.
Yeah.
Are all...
It's a package.
Didn't they all, like, lead an odd man rush against Ohio State in that game in South Bend? And you were like...
Probably.
You were all like, yeah. Oh, it was against Minnesota. They got a goal off of it.
Yeah.
And you were like the most... They're the least likely group to lead a 4-on-2 for Michigan, and they get a goal.
You know, I with this group, same as it ever was.
Most of them are juniors. Van Wy and Moyle are juniors, so they'll be back. Raby's a senior, so he's probably done. And then LaPointe was a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the same as normal. Van Wy and Moyle are the anchors, and then Raby was hurt for a little bit, so they put LaPointe there, and LaPointe offers a little different skill set, not as fast as Raby, but perhaps a little more touch of offensive ability, though still TBD on that. And, you know, they kill penalties, they win faceoffs, they can grind out shifts on the forecheck, and Moyle always seems like he finds a way to score big goals. So I got no problem with any of these guys, and I don't have a lot of worry that if they want to put LaPointe there, he can play there with Raby being gone.
Well, and if that's your fourth line, I will take that
in
a heartbeat, because they don't really mess up. They don't add a ton, but they still do get gritty goals, and they put a lot of pressure on you. I wanted to mention, I'll go through each of these guys, but I wanted to shout out Garrett Van Wy, because I thought that he was one of the people that really improved the penalty kill in the second half of the year. I thought he deflected a lot of cross-ice passes, because you had mentioned in the first half of the year how Michigan struggled with being a bunch of traffic cones with no sticks in the first half, and Van Wy really took to that and started really breaking up passes, and I thought he played really well in the penalty kill, and that's what led to it. My Moyle memory is that crazy hit that he had in Madison. Did he get ejected for that? I can't remember if he got ejected or if he should have been ejected.
He should have been for that one.
Yeah.
He was ejected for a different one. I mean, he's no doubt Michigan's most physical player, and Michigan needs some of that. So.
Yeah. LaPointe, I thought, was... My memory of him was he scored on that scramble in front in South Bend and was on the power play, and I was impressed with him for getting on Michigan's second power play unit and creating some chances. I think they put him in the middle getting some... like one-timer shots from the slot. And then Raby was the power play goal that in Columbus when you and I think we might have been watching this game together, or maybe you were texting me and you were like, wait a minute, is it Raby on the power play?
Oh, yeah.
And I was
that
like,
was wild. Yeah.
And then he scored it.
I forgot about that.
I was really happy for him in that situation. It was good for him. And obviously there are unfortunately those clears against Minnesota on the road.
We don't need to talk about that.
We don't talk about this? Okay. Eric. Alex says I can't talk about that. So
you don't want to bring up the bad memory.
Well, it's part of the game. It's part of the review. You gotta can't not deal with stuff, Alex. The last guy.
It's like we were talking about last week about like when a famous person who did some good things and some bad things die. What do you mention? Like Elgin Baylor, for example.
Dakota Raby didn't die.
Nobody's graduating.
He's gonna live a full successful life. I think he's a great surfer, from what I've heard. All right, who's the last guy that we haven't gone over yet? See how
Jack Becker.
Jack,
who we have
Becker.
Some breaking news about.
Okay.
He has committed to Arizona State.
Has he really?
Yep.
I hope they play him. It'll be like the James Sanchez redux.
Yeah, James Sanchez number two.
He's the captain, and he was a seventh round pick of Boston.
That was 15 years ago, though.
And he was also a healthy scratch. I put his line on here as alternate, because he kind of played on multiple different lines throughout the year when he was in, But if you can only dress 13 players and Michigan had everyone healthy, he wasn't always in the top 13.
You know, he was a good guy and a program guy, helped build the early Mel Pearson era and had some nice moments over the years, could play in front of the net a little bit. But at the end of the day, he just didn't have the offensive skill or really the athletic level to hang with some of the other dudes Michigan had and just kind of left him in that Morgan and, you know, Lambert and all those guys that are just names, you know, that really just don't have a spot necessarily.
Do you have a memory for him?
My Becker memory, if we're just talking about his career, is I remember him really good in his freshman year with the Pasta Brothers, and
yeah,
they had a goal to tie the game in the Frozen Four game. I think it was Mike that scored the goal, but maybe it was Nick. Okay,
yeah,
but they together were working really well.
They were a really good third line that year.
Yeah, so that's my Becker memory. Happier times.
I have a couple goals from him. One was he scored to tie the game against Arizona State this year, which, whew, that they didn't lose.
Yeah, I do remember, yeah.
He scored right at the end of the second period. And also, he got that really nice goal against Minnesota on the game that they ended up losing, but he gave them a chance to tie because they were down 3-1, and he scored their second goal with like a minute to go, and right before they end up having two really good chances to tie. But it was a nice feed from Brisson, and Becker kind of made a guy hesitate a little bit and shot it and beat LaFontaine, and I was happy for him to be able to go out like that, getting a couple down the stretch when his team needed him. But he's a C for me. He gave what you expected from him. I don't think it was... You would have liked him to be able to play his way into the lineup a little bit more, but when you're a captain in certain situations, there's some intangibles that you can bring in the locker room that we can't really speak to and know, you know, how much he kept this team together, because the team looked like it was fully functioning. It didn't look like it fractioned into a lot of different pieces, which it could have given a couple different times during the season.
I'll give him a C minus.
Fair enough. All right. We are going to take a break because this segment ran a little bit long, and we'll come back and we'll talk about some defense, goaltendings, and some overall thoughts.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Tigers lost 15-1 today. Are you now a full-time Blue Jays fan?
They're not rivals, so you can be fans of both teams, just
they're
like you are with
league.
The Avalanche and the Islanders.
Right, but they're in different leagues, so they can play each other in the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, well, I'm not too worried about that happening anytime soon. I mean...
That's what I've said about the Islanders my whole life. Is
yeah,
like,
well,
they're
now,
terrible.
Now this time is coming around.
I know. I'm really excited.
I am one of the most pessimistic people about the Tigers rebuild, so.
So you're just going to float with the Blue Jays? Oh, are you going to bail on them like you did on the Senators?
Okay. I haven't bailed on anyone in the NHL. I never formally adopted a team. That was just a running meme.
Are you just like dating around right now? You're like, I'm too young to be serious with
Since
the baseball
team. Since the Expos were unjustly ripped away from Montreal, there's only one baseball team in Canada.
Do you remember the Expos?
No, not really.
I almost had an Expos hat, but my dad wouldn't let me buy it. He wanted me to get
the Expos had cool hat.
I thought
cool
so too, and he we argued about it. I was like six, and he ended up making me get a Mets hat, which like I was a Mets fan, but I really wanted that Expos batting helmet.
Well, the
that
Blue Jays
really
have
cool.
Now. Did you see their powder blue uniforms? They're trying to honor the
so, like,
Expos,
the, like the '80s. The '80s, all the road teams wore like blue.
Powder blue is sweet.
I agree. You don't have to convince me on blue anything.
Yeah.
How many times have you hung out with me or we done one of these and I wasn't wearing blue?
You were never wearing powder blue, though.
That's true. Do you want me to add that?
You can get a Royals jersey.
Ooh. Or a road jersey from, like, the Cardinals or the Phillies or...
Yeah.
There's another one. The Blue Jays, I think, did it too. All right, we've already stalled enough. Do you want to talk about Michigan's defense?
Sure.
Should we start with the one guy who we know will not be back?
Yeah.
Cameron York, as he's listed on the internet now. It's not Cam York. Huh?
Said Yam Cork.
Is you told me that was a thing that you started?
I didn't start it. It's just a very good spoonerism.
Okay. Are you into those?
When it's Yam Cork.
So Yam Cork was a sophomore defenseman, the heir apparent replacement to Quinn Hughes, apparently, last year.
Yep.
And he was a first-round pick, mid-first-round pick, I think, by Philly.
Yep.
And he was a offensive defenseman, was pretty good at getting the puck out and in, was definitely a threat. Could be questionable on the defensive end from time to time, though, too.
I mean, I think that he's a guy that you put on a second pair and you find a stay-at-home guy to pair with him. And then if you do that, I think he'd be pretty darn good at the NHL level. I mean, I have no real concerns for him, and I think he doesn't have anything to prove coming back to college that he can't get better at the NHL level, frankly.
4 goals, 16 assists. So he had 20 points in 24 games.
He was fine on the power play.
Yep.
And you know, he showed some ability to activate, you know, into the offensive zone.
Oh, yeah.
and come down on plays. And he can do a little bit of everything. And he's not terrible defensively. I mean, I think Hughes was better than him offensively, but he was better than Hughes defensively. So,
well, low bar there. But what's your memory of Cam York? I'm sorry, Yam Cork.
Probably that one goal.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Was it against Penn State, the one where he went like end-to-end? It was in the Avalanche of Goals game early on.
Yeah.
And he came flying down the wing and scored. I mean, he had a couple of those rush goals that were pretty impressive.
I had one as his fourth guy in goal, where he came in as it was a 3-on-3, and he rushed up and scored sort of after he'd passed the slot and shot back and had it. The other thing I always remember about Yam Cork is the wraparound goals. He had about 3 or 4 of those in his career and just kind of came hard down at the one post and went around and beat the goalie to the other side. I think he did that. I know he did it against Ohio State last year. I think he maybe did it against Ohio State again this year, and he had 2 or 3 of them. He also had a goal on a shot that went like into the net, but the goalie was in the net, and we couldn't.
Oh yeah,
and
the
we
one against Notre
tell.
Dame.
Yeah. Is it against? Yeah, it was Notre Dame. That's right. That was a wraparound too, and we couldn't really tell where the puck was. And then we looked on the replay, and it was definitely in the net that was then brought back out by the goalie. So Michigan will definitely miss him. There is a lot of upside that he's had, but I think he's ready.
What goes
for
around
level.
Comes around. Cam York replaces a Hughes, and he will be replaced by a Hughes.
Grade for Yam Cork.
I don't know, A minus.
I give him an A.
I had no problem with him.
I don't think that Michigan could have asked for a whole lot more out of him from what he gave this year. His first D partner, Keaton Person, who may not necessarily be Michigan's second best defenseman, but we're trying to go line by line, is also a sophomore, is a free agent. Not the same player as York.
Well, he was a defensive guy that they paired with York. He doesn't do a lot in the offensive zone. And, you know, we talked about his upside and his downside. He's very, very good off the puck, and you know, I have no issues with him as a defender. He struggles with the breakout, and he just struggles to handle the puck in general, right? He
that's
his decision making. But again, it's not decision making as in gap control or you know,
being
when to
right
engage
place.
In a puck battle. I mean, it's just the decision making when he touches the puck. I don't know if the game just, you know, speeds up and he can't handle it when he gets the puck, but if he can just get better at the zone exits, right? If you can just make the first pass and break it out, he'd be an awesome player. Because everything else I have no problem with and what he's asked to do.
You think he was just really good at hot potato when he was a kid?
I don't know. Maybe.
What's your memory of Keaton Person this year?
We don't need to talk about it. They weren't very good. Because that's the nature of a defensive defenseman, right? Is that
not necessarily.
They don't make many highlights.
You can have, I mean, there are things you can do without the puck.
Yeah, but there, I mean, it's, you don't, there aren't a lot of, like, you know, diving to break up a 2-on-1 that I remember vividly. Like,
okay, I'll give you that. So in your grade?
B minus.
Yeah, I had him as about a C. He was about average. I think he fit well with York. There were some things, obviously, could have done a little bit better, but we also have had worse Michigan defensemen in the last 5 or 10 years, too. So the second pair, in some ways, this could have been Michigan's first pair. They did everything together, and they both did most things pretty well, I think. We'll start with Owen Power, who we discussed in the opening. He's a freshman, going to get drafted. Rumors he could go top 5, he could go top 10, but he's definitely a lottery pick. This is a guy who kind of has all the potential in the world in a lot of ways because he's 6'5", he has a really long stick, he can skate pretty well, he moves the puck well, he had a few nice shots on the power play, his passing, I think, is maybe his best feature.
Probably. I mean, he's a very good transition player. Mm-hmm. His long reach allows him to get to some things that sometimes he's slow to read a play or he gets caught flat-footed, but then his reach allows him to recover in a way other players can't. You know, I don't think he's a dynamic player at the NHL level, but he's got a lot of attributes to like, and there's still a lot of potential there. I'd like to see him get meaner and more physical and win more puck battles. Mm-hmm. That's the next thing to improve on. But if they can get him back for a second season, I think he can slide up and take on more of York's minutes.
Do you have a memory of Owen Power?
Probably that first goal against Arizona State, where they had the really nice passing and he scored basically into a yawning net.
Owen Power play goal. Mine was against Wisconsin at Yost in the second game, the one that we all went like, whoa, because he kind of came into the zone, deked a guy, and then beat the goalie, and you were like, oh, hey, there's his potential. The other one is our memory of him. It's not really a knock. I mean, it kind of is, but it's more of like a lovable teddy bear thing. We always used to play all year in every, was it series or game? I forget. But one of those things, he was going to have the puck and then at some point just fall over.
Yep.
And he very rarely disappointed in that aspect. His defensive partner was Nick Blankenbergs. We affectionately called him Blanks. I'm sure other people have before, too.
I think the team calls him
that. Yeah, that's not us. But it's also easier to write than just Blankenberg. Like, we were talking about... What were you saying? Like, you were talking about the Flyers, and you're like, can you imagine covering the Flyers and having to write out Gostis Bear over and over and over
I've
again?
Started to learn how to spell it the more I've typed
yeah, but
in.
Do you want to type 11 letters every time you're going to be like, oh, look who just broke the puck out
Sometimes.
Or whatever it was? Sometimes. Yeah. Well, we spend our time doing different things. So, Nick Blankenberg was probably... Oh, did you? We didn't do a power grade.
B plus.
I had him as an A. Okay. I thought that I didn't think that he could have been a whole lot better.
That's probably fair, but.
But I respect the B plus too. Back to Blankenberg. This is like a program guy. He came in, I believe, as a walk on. I don't know if he's getting scholarship money now. He's definitely worth a scholarship somewhere. Definitely, I would say even at Michigan. Kind of does it all. Undersized. But has developed a real shot on the power play, moves the puck, can skate, and is not afraid to like push back against bigger wingers that he always ends up facing.
I mean, he's defenseman Matty Beniers, right? Like, and the ability to do everything to compete at a high level. And, you know, for a guy that was an overager, was undrafted, he can really, really skate. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Because usually guys in that mold are guys that are hockey players but can't skate.
And if you can get him back, or you can get Power back, rather, to mm-hmm. play with Blankenberg, that could be, you know, your top pair. Kind of trying to think of, I mean, from my childhood, it was always Lidstrom and Rafalski, where two guys on the top pair who both could move the puck, right? Mm-hmm. Not Victor Hedman and Jan Ruda, or whatever that guy is, that, you know, can barely skate.
Victor Hedman and whoever his partner is.
The Lightning love to put just random stay-at-home guys with Hedman. But, you know, two guys that can really move the puck, who can both shoot, who can both score, and who can both play defense. And I think they could shoulder a ton of minutes if they're playing together next season.
Yeah, I mean, that's a top pair.
Yeah, no question.
I don't think it's really, yeah. Yeah. Do you have a memory from Blankenberg specifically this year?
He had that one goal against, I think, Penn State where he went end to end.
Yeah, and I have that, the PSU rush goal. He also had a really nice goal against Minnesota in Minneapolis from the point. It might have been on the power play. But he I think, scored a few of those. Blankenberg had 5 goals, 8 assists, 13 points. Not too bad for, you know, probably Michigan's second or third defenseman of the year. A grade?
I go with an A.
I have an A. I agree. I don't think you could have asked a whole lot more from him. Moving down to Michigan's third pair, Jacob Truscott was always on the third pair, so we'll talk about him first. He's a freshman, a fifth-round pick of Vancouver. Came in as a sort of high-floor, low-ceiling guy and more or less played that out?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I thought he was pretty strong defensively early on. He didn't make as many noticeable defensive plays, but he also wasn't victimized very often.
Mm-hmm.
he has got a really hard shot, but hasn't shown the offensive touch to really get to use it a lot. But as a third pair defenseman, I have no problem, and he's going to be a program guy who will be around a while, and so you can hopefully develop him over the next couple seasons into a top four guy.
Do you put him with Luke Hughes?
I probably would.
As maybe the second pair? Assuming you get Power and Blankenberg back?
Yeah, that's probably what I would do.
My memory, I don't have a great memory of him, but I know that he scored the goal against Notre Dame, so we didn't get shut out in that 2-1 game. We were down 2-0, and he scored a goal there, and that was maybe a good use of his one goal on the year. Do you have a grade for Jacob Truscott?
Go with a B-.
B-.
Very solid.
I had him as a C.
Yeah.
Pretty average, which is fine, especially for third pair freshman defenseman. His defensive partner changed a couple of times. We'll talk about Jack Summers first, because I think that's who Michigan wanted to be on there, who started the year and finished the year as his partner. He's a junior, free agent. And Summers had sort of a roller coaster year where he was all right, I think, to start, ran into some trouble, had a few breakdown plays, took a really bad penalty against Minnesota here, got like a 10-minute misconduct, and then got hurt and was sat. Yeah. And then I'm not sure how much where the injury stopped. And
well, he was scratched one of the Notre Dame games, and then
for not the best play.
Yeah, the injury was probably the injury that consumed his January.
Okay.
You know, it was a tough start to the year, no question about that for him. But I think he got a little better as the year went along, and he's shown enough play over the years at Michigan now going into his senior year that I think he should be fine on a third pair as a senior. I don't have a lot of issues with that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a memory from him?
I mean, it's got to be that one goal he had against Minnesota, right?
Only goal.
Yeah.
The on the power play where you said, and we both talked about this, but in all caps, you said to me, "Get it to Summers." That was pretty great. Grade?
C minus.
Item is a D.
Yeah, that beginning of the year definitely colors things a little bit.
Yeah, he finished the year stronger, and I give him props for improving, but he was definitely part of Michigan's defensive struggles in the first half of the year. The guy that they replaced him with, who was an interesting case, he joined Michigan halfway through his freshman year. I think he's a local kid who is a walk-on. Jay Karanen, I have him down as an alternate because he didn't play all the time. He's a sophomore now, free agent, obviously. There's not a lot to say about him, and I think that's okay as like a 6th or 7th defenseman.
He had the one pretty bad situation against MSU.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I thought he was fine. I mean, you can have a worse 7th defenseman.
Well, and when you get to that point, not noticing a guy, it's kind of like good refereeing sometimes. Like, if you don't notice a referee,
or
like, that's a good thing.
In football, right?
Right. If you don't notice a guy, he's not doing anything that's going to mess it up. And he did score against Michigan State. That's my memory of him. That is the one time that he really did pop off the page, and it was nice to see him get on the board.
Yeah.
Do you have a grade for Karanen?
C.
I gave him a C, too. I thought what Michigan didn't have Summers for a couple different reasons, and it could have gotten a lot worse, but it didn't because he filled in the role, I think, admirably. Two guys that we're going to kind of not really discuss a whole lot unless you have something to say, Josh Grohl and Jake Gingell, both played 2 games, both played when Michigan was losing all of their players to the World Juniors, so they played against probably the toughest competition they were going to see.
They didn't play enough to give them a grade.
No.
I don't have anything to say except Grohl might get to play next year. Gingell probably never will.
Yeah, Grohl is a guy that you thought was a decent take for Michigan this year as a 4-year guy?
I mean, he had a decent scouting profile and is like the 10th best recruit in your class. That's fine.
But he's going to be a depth guy.
I mean, he'll get chances as he gets older.
Mm-hmm.
Gingell is a purely depth guy. He's the Jack Levy of the defense.
I see. And Jack Levy is a perfect transition to goaltending, which arguably is Michigan's strength of the year. It was now 2 years running, and I assume that even if Strauss were to leave, it would still be one of their biggest strengths next year. Strauss, man, it's really hard to summarize what he did. He ended up splitting time with Portillo in the second half. I can count maybe two or three goals that I wish Strauss probably shouldn't have given up or wish he wouldn't have given up. But like it's tough to really give up fewer than that. Oh, if you play enough games.
Yep. Strauss was what we expected. Not really much else to say.
Do you have a specific memory of him?
Not particularly. I mean, he had five shutouts, and that's really all you needed to know.
It's pretty good. I have the one sequence in Minneapolis where he made a couple post-to-post saves, and then he had the one where he got his stick across, and it went like off the knob of his stick and deflected it high, and that was pretty impressive. But that's something that we've seen him do now for 3 years, and hopefully we will for another year. What's your grade for Strauss?
A.
Agreed. His backup / co-starter for the second half of the year was Eric Portillo. He came in very ballyhooed. Is that a good word to describe him?
Sure.
Michigan's, highest drafted goalie since, I guess they had LaFontaine for a year or so. But he was,
I think he went higher than LaFontaine.
Did he?
I think LaFontaine went in the 70s and Portillo was 60-something.
Okay. But he'd been, talked about coming to Michigan for a few years now. Came over from Sweden, went to the USHL, finally matriculated to Michigan, and is, I'm going to say, Michigan's biggest goalie they've ever had?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't.
Do you remember a 6'9 goalie that Michigan's put in net?
I don't remember if there was a 6'8 goalie, so.
That's fair. But I thought he played, I don't know what else they could have asked of him to do. He played really well and actually split time with arguably the best goalie in the country.
Portillo had better stats, which doesn't mean much, but it's worth noting. And when he was out there, outside of that weird Ohio State game where we never got to really know what was happening because of the replays.
You said we're not allowed to talk about bad things.
Outside of, I don't even know if they were bad about him.
I'm talking about some of those BTN goals. Plus.
Yeah, we can talk about bad about BTN Plus, but outside of that weird game, he looked just as good as Strauss Mann, and that sentence says a lot. And if Strauss bolts, I have no major issues with Portillo in net.
What was your memory of Strauss this year?
Portillo.
Yes.
Probably just how much he played the puck. I mean, that's what I think about with him.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because it was his first couple games in net where he's, skating halfway to the blue line to retrieve pucks. Yeah. Where are you going, buddy? My specific one was he had a really nice sequence against Wisconsin at Yost where he made a save on a guy right in front, a double save, actually. The puck gets reversed, gets cleared out, reversed to the other side, and he's down making a skate save, I think, gets up, crosses his crease, and faces the shooter and traps the puck underneath him as on a blast from the point. And that was kind of his, okay, this guy's for real. And there's some luck involved there, too, but you have to be able to do a lot of things. And he did all of them in about 5 to 10 second span there. I think, to me, that was his moment of the year.
Yeah.
Do you have a grade?
A.
I agree. I don't think that... I mean, he came in and more or less was as advertised. So, it's getting kind of late, but let's go through each of the different segments, and we can kind of talk very quickly and grade them, and then we'll talk about it overall. The offense has scored 91 goals in 26 games, which ends up being about 3.5 goals a game. I think that's pretty good.
Fine by me.
Do you have a grade for the offense?
It was one of the higher scoring teams in college hockey, and you play some very defensive teams in the Big Ten, so got no problems. We can go with an A.
I said a B. I thought that they didn't really have a goal scorer. They had plenty of goal scorers.
That's fair.
But they didn't have a guy who you remember the Connor year, and he just was unstoppable, and Larkin was kind of like that. They never didn't have a guy like that. They had to score sort of as a team and a unit, and they did, but...
Not everyone can have Cole Caulfield.
That's true. But the leading goal scorer had 10 goals. Two of them had 10 goals in 24 games, and I think an elite offense has a guy who just kind of takes over a game and scores. And so I think there's room to grow for next year, so I'm going to stick with my B. Defense... was 26 games. They gave up 51 goals, which ends up somewhere around 1.96 goals per game. Struggled early, got a lot better in the second half. Pretty good.
Yeah, I give them a B.
I have a B too. I think that they had a 2 or 3 week stretch at the end of the first half of the season that things got kind of dicey and we weren't really sure what the second half was going to look like, but they cleaned pretty much all of that up. And after that, I mean, did they play 60 minutes combined of bad defensive hockey? I'm not sure.
Not 60 full minutes, no.
I mean, if you add up different sections.
Probably not, no. There were some small issues in different games, and some of them proved consequential, but otherwise, no, not really.
Michigan's power play scored at a 24% rate, which is pretty good. It had its ups and downs. Maybe that's life on the power play.
It's a short season. You only played 26 games, something like that, 27 games, and that you can only judge so much from that short amount of time. They had some good moments, and they late in the season they got a power play goal against Minnesota in the last game they played. They got a power play goal against Ohio State in the second last game. I mean, I have no real issues with it. There were some bumps and things, but mostly did its job.
Grade?
A-.
I have a B. I think that's good. I've seen Michigan have a few better power plays. I think Michigan's this unit can be better. I think that if they get guys back, it will be better. So I think there's a slight bit of room to improve, but I was impressed with what they were able to do this year. Penalty kill is interesting, because if you grade their penalty kill in the first half of the season, we both have our heads in the middle of these couches. If you grade it in the second half, we are probably waving flags. So there was definite improvement made. We touched on that with Van Wy. We touched on that with some of the defensemen. They definitely picked it up, and you could not pass through Michigan the way that you could early on.
Yeah, they improved a lot. I mean, I give them a B- overall. The first half was a D, and the second half was an A, so you meet in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, I had them as a B, because in the end, they kill at 82% rate, which is, I mean, would you take that going into next year?
Probably, yeah.
I think we've seen penalty kills have been better, so I think that there's room to improve there, but still pretty good. Goaltending, they gave up 48 goals in 26 games. I know there's a discrepancy from what we talked about in the defense, but there's three empty net goals. So it ends up being 1.85 goals a game.
Goaltending's an easy A. Not much to say.
Don't think there's
we already
a whole
covered
lot
to
the, say there, too.
The goaltenders, so
this is where it gets interesting. Michigan gets really high grades, but they finish third in the Big Ten. They are over 500, but they're not really in the class throughout the year in production, in wins and losses with Minnesota and Wisconsin.
I mean, you got the eighth overall seed in the tournament. You were a top 10 team, and you played pretty even with those teams. The consistency was bumpy, but overall, this was a really good team, and they were going to have a shot to play well in the tournament. I mean, obviously the tournament is pretty random to begin with, but as a whole, this was a good team, and I think our grades reflect that. I mean, I don't look at this team and think that they underachieved, really. I think Wisconsin and Minnesota are really good teams too, and we're more veteran teams where you had guys like Holloway and Caulfield who had an extra year under them, and some of their defensemen were upperclassmen in addition to Weisbach and Pelton Bice, right? That was a pretty veteran team. And Minnesota had six forwards that were juniors or seniors, in addition to a senior goalie and everything. So those teams just had a little bit more in the way of experience. Michigan's top four scorers were freshmen, and beyond that, it was all sophomores. This was a team that was playing a little bit of a disadvantage in experience, but they made up for it a bit in talent. And at the end of the day, I care about where they are at the end of the season, and they were a really good team at the end of the year.
I think that is the biggest key for Mel, is they improved a ton, and their things that they were good at didn't necessarily get worse, but they got better at the things that we were a little nervous about heading into the World Juniors, and those being a little bit on defense and on the penalty kill, and both those things tightened up considerably. I will also say that he tinkered with a couple of lines, and moving Brisson with Bortolo worked out really, really well. And now, then you start having two pretty powerful lines to go with a serviceable third line and, one of the better fourth lines in college hockey, not necessarily always from a scoring perspective, but he put a team together that obviously they were in a loaded region, but as we saw, anything can happen. And this team, it wasn't a long shot for them to win the title.
No.
So if they keep it together, I gave their season a B overall. I thought
I give it a B plus, but
got to hang a banner to get an A for me.
Okay.
Got to hang, or plural, but they had a couple chances and couldn't get it done. And there's, hopefully some work left to do for next year that people be hungry to come back for. And I think that, you know, we look at these guys, and there's definitely guys, there's cases to be made on, what, half a dozen guys that they could go to another level, but no one was standout or standoutish so much that it was like, oh, this guy can't be here. Maybe York was one. He probably hit his ceiling as to what he's going to do, and he left, and maybe he should have. But I don't think anyone else is at that level where it's like, this guy clearly, he's no one's Cole Caulfield, like you said.
I mean, the talk about the expectations for next year really just depends on which guys come back and what the roster looks like. If you can get three or four guys of your, you know, top talent group back, then I think this is a team that really should be looking to win the Big Ten next year. And you hope it is finally the year where you're not, you know, struggling in the first half and then catching up in the second half, where you can be dominant start to finish. But it's hard to make those predictions when you don't know what the roster will look like at all.
That's unfortunately true, and we've had poor Michigan summers before. We've heard rumblings different places that that potentially will not happen this year, but obviously that's not confirmed, and there are many different factors to come our way. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast. We don't think this is going to necessarily be the end. There is still some Michigan baseball, tennis, softball that you and I both poke our heads around and cover. We're both also obviously rabid NHL fans that we can talk about. So
there may be a few more episodes.
I expect us to do a few more in the coming weeks, at least while these sports are going on and there's something interesting to cover. Do you have any parting words?
It was an enjoyable season, and hopefully the fans who consume this podcast will be able to watch the team in person next year.
I agree.
Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.20 for Alex Train and David Nasternak. If you only like hockey, you can now unsubscribe. But if you like other sports, there are some more surprises for you.